Welcome to Conflict Managed. I'm your host, Mary Brown. Today on Conflict Managed, we welcome Karen Valencik. Karen is not just a speaker and business leader. She's a transformative force in the world of conflict mastery and leadership. Can you imagine a business environment or a world in which people, despite conflict, get their work done with ease and grace? Bringing this to reality is Karen's mission. With over three decades of experience, Karen has honed her craft, blending her expertise in science, martial arts, and communication to create the groundbreaking Spiral Impact Method. As the president of Spiral Impact, Karen brings a unique perspective to performance improvement for leaders and teams. Her method, Spiral Impact, offers a simple yet profound way to master conflict, foster collaboration, and solve problems with grace. Through her books, including the best-selling Black Belt edition of Spiral Impact, Karen provides tangible tools and insights to empower individuals and teams to navigate challenging situations with ease. Karen's journey from corporate engineer to performance improvement expert is as inspiring as it is unconventional. With a background in mechanical engineering and a career at Delco Remy, a division of General Motors, Karen was one of the first female engineers in her field. Drawing inspiration from her experiences in engineering and her dedication to Aikido, the Japanese art of reconciliation, Karen developed Spiral Impact to help individuals and organizations thrive in the face of conflict and change. Karen is also a distinguished speaker. Karen speaks nationally at all types of conferences and is known for her entertaining, audience-involving presentations, which are full of actionable insights that individuals and teams can put straight to use. Good morning, Karen, and welcome to Conflict Managed.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, Mary. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. It's nice that the weather is starting to change and it's sunny here in Tennessee. And how about where you are?
I am in Indianapolis. And I have to say today it's kind of rainy, but the last 2 days have been in the 70s and sunny. So it's been fantastic.
Yeah. I always forget how much the sun means to me and most of us when it's not around.
Yes, I get it. And I have to say that I just came back from Central America and it was sunny every day there. Last Saturday, it was like really dreary and gray. So the sun makes a huge difference. Yeah,
it sure does. Well, I'm so excited to talk with you today and I'm interested in your spiral method and what you're up to. But let's start with just you. Can you tell us about the first job you ever had as a young person?
The first job as a young person, not like professional, but as a job. Yes. Well, I babysat was probably my first job. But in terms of actually an actual employer, I worked at a fish and chips place. And it was called H Salt Fish and Chips. I don't think they're around anymore. But yeah, I sold fried fish and chips. And that was a job I enjoyed. Although every time I went home from that work, I had to really take a shower. I smelled so bad.
Yes. So what was that like, your first sort of, paid employment beyond babysitting? What was the work environment like?
You know, I really had fun there. It was a fun work environment. We served customers, we cooked fish, we kind of all did everything. And it was a very fun environment. So I enjoyed it. Of course, I didn't enjoy smelling like fish, and I certainly wanted to make more money than I was making there. So, yeah.
What do you remember about the management?
I remember always feeling supported and valued by the management there. That was not a high conflict place. And actually, I remember I rode my bike there to work. So it was a good, positive first experience in my work. Now, after that, when I was still in high school, I went on to work at a department store. That I found to be a different experience. And that, while I liked my colleagues, dealing with customers in that environment was a little bit more, there was a little bit more conflict involved in that. And honestly, I haven't thought about this for years. I ended up being let go from that job. And I really felt like it was because my supervisor was hitting on me and I did not, I did not go out with him. And I ended up, he just took me off the calendar and without a word. And so that was not a very pleasant experience. So,
oh, wow. What two different experiences. When you talk about the first one, anytime you work with food and you're working with customers and sometimes you've got these lines and it can be very high pressure. And yet it really It doesn't have to be. In other words, you can have high pressure, but still be a good work environment, being run smoothly, collegial.
Well, and I think in that food environment too, it was a fast food restaurant. So, and I think the environment I was in was just a really fun environment. In high school too, I had a job at a drugstore. I guess I haven't thought about these early jobs, Mary, for a long time. But I also worked in a drugstore, which was maybe one of my favorite jobs as a young person in high school. And we had a huge camaraderie with the people that I worked with. And the people that would come through were always very friendly, and it was a very good, positive work environment. And it makes all the difference. And I think people that come through that line really feel it. And I noticed that with places that I shop today. And I tend to go more towards places where the environment is really great. Trader Joe's is a great example of that. I always feel uplifted when I go there. And that's not true with every grocery store I go to. And that's all culture. It's all culture.
It
So.
is so true. Sometimes we say to ourselves, it's the job. It's because I'm doing this kind of job that it's going to be dreary or difficult or not collegial. And that's just not true at all. It's not the work, it's the people.
It's the people, and it's also, I think, what we bring to it, because I think I could probably do anything and be happy in it, because that's just kind of how I'm wired. Unless it's incredibly stressful. I can't say I love babysitting. I was not, that was to me was really difficult work. But from there I went to school and I studied engineering, and and I loved that. And I was really grateful to have the opportunity to co-op my way through school. So I worked for a division of General Motors, and General Motors was very advanced in terms of work study cooperative type programs, way before I think a lot of other places were. And I had such a mix of experience in that. And when I was a student, it was fantastic. I found that 98% of the people I worked with were all about helping me grow as an engineer. And it was a such a fantastic, fantastic opportunity. And then I went on to experience some other difficulties in that work. And I should say, I was one of the very first, and I was the first in my department, which was product design and development, women engineers where I worked. So I was a little bit of an anomaly, which didn't seem odd to me, because I grew up with brothers. And of course, I was in school with mostly men. So that was not an unusual experience for me. But I did find my first really frustrating conflict in that work. And I'd love to share it if
Yes,
you
please. Yes, please
mind,
do.
because I know we a lot of us in this field of conflict, we talk about toxic work environments, and there are really toxic work environments, but there are some work environments that really don't go to the toxic level, but also really don't bring out the best in people. And so my first experience with really difficult conflict in that role, I had what we called back then a straw boss, who was a person that was, some people might call a supervisor. He did not do my annual review. He wasn't my boss boss. He sat between me and my regular boss. And he was a very smart guy. He was very detailed, and he was very controlling. And I found in that work that I was micromanaged, and I felt a lot of the way he communicated really kind of made me diminished how I felt about myself. And I struggled with that, and I really didn't know what to do about it. And then I did talk to my regular boss about it in my annual, and I told him, I said, I'm enjoying the work, but I'm really having difficulty working with Larry. I'll call him Larry. But he was very concerned about that. And he said, "Well, I'll see what I can do." But he didn't have any advice for me. And I really, at that point in the work world, there weren't coaches, there weren't anything like that. And so I was somehow hoping that he would help me in some way, but nothing ever transpired there. And then one day we were all sitting and we were kind of in a workspace with, I don't know, there's probably six, eight people in a space. And Larry was sitting there with a couple of customers. And all of a sudden he went, "Karen, you didn't do what I told you to do." And, it was some kind of minor thing around how about going to do something. But what at that moment was a turning point for me. And I stood up and I said, we don't have, I said, we don't have to keep working together. I know this isn't working out for you, and it's really not working out for me. And I said, we don't have to continue this. And I left. And I felt just really at peace with that. But then when I came back in the room, he caught me and he says, "We need to go talk to our boss." And so we went into my boss's office and Larry said, "We had an incident out there and you need to know about it." And he looked at me and says, "Karen, tell him what happened." And I said to my boss, I said, "You and I have already discussed the difficulties I've been having working with Larry." And I said, "I really don't have anything else to say." And so and honestly, what I said based upon, I was in my 20s back then, and based upon my experience now, what I said to him wasn't awful. I was stating a fact, is this isn't working very well. And so, but what's interesting, what happened there, Mary, is I got called down to the chief engineer's office in the corner office. And I got told I would have a black mark on my record if I didn't turn myself around in the next 6 months. And it was interesting because I got no advice, no support, nothing. It was just like, you need to figure this out. And, and I was a study person and I always was a high performer, and it was really confusing to me. But long story short, I ended up transferring to a different department down the hall, and it was a totally different culture. It was totally different culture. The man I worked for, and I'll say his name is Robert Johnson. He was known as kind of a tough person, but he was fantastic to work for. And all the engineers in that office, we were all very collaborative. We talked things, we created. It was such a great environment. And so I look at those two environments and it really informs a lot of what I do today, which is, how do you really bring out the best in people? And one of the engineers I worked with in particular, Vince, he just modeled what I teach now. And I didn't know what it was back then, but he really modeled it. And so I have those experiences to go forth to know what's possible in the work I do today. So, yeah.
I love several of the things that you mentioned. One is that it's like we know what good is when we see it. We may not have the words, but we see when people are excellent leaders and when people are doing the sorts of things that help us grow and flourish. And as you said, collaborate and making that kind of environment. And even if we can't use sort of academic speak or to be able to think about it in that way, we know it and we respond. And another thing that you mentioned is that, here you are, an educated, smart woman in this field, and you're doing your work, and yet it's confusing that what's going on, the dynamics, like why is this happening? I think that's also something that we know. We know when something is wrong, and most of the time it catches us off guard because we're doing our work. We know that this shouldn't be happening. And you even said something, and there's no help or resources, and we're supposed to figure it out, but figure out what? It is very confusing and then time consuming to try to figure out and navigate the people issues.
And I was felt grateful. I got a big bonus the 6 months to the day that that whole thing happened. So whatever I was doing worked, but I don't know that it was because of me. I think it was because of the people I was working with. So anyway, there we go. So my life changed when I actually was introduced to the martial art Aikido, which really teaches me and informs me in terms of how do I interact to get the best result for not just myself, but for the other person involved. And and that looking at where we get into resistance and how do we move with that so that we can learn the most, we can create momentum and movement with that. And that to me is where the magic happens in relationships and on teams.
So how did you find Aikido? How did that come into your life?
I had read a story in a book many, many, many years ago, and it was by a man named Terry Dobson, and it was called A Kind Word Turneth Away Wrath. And it's a story that's been reprinted many times, but it was really about a guy that was in Japan. Aikido is a Japanese martial art based upon position, not force, and is a really radically different martial art than anything else that's out there. And I read this story, and it was a story about him riding a bus when this big drunk guy got on and started swinging things around. And to just kind of cut to the chase in the story, the fellow Terry Dobson was studying Aikido, and he recognized that his teacher told him that, don't start a fight. You don't want to go out looking for fights. But yet he saw this situation where somebody was really in danger, and there was a young couple with a baby and an older couple there, and this guy was just thrashing around and he was drunk, and he felt called to action because this was really wrong and he needed to make it right. And so he stood up and kind of challenged the guy. And then right at that moment where he might have moved, there's all of a sudden this voice that comes out of nowhere, and it says, "Hey." And it was just one of those things that interrupted the whole energy of the thing. And it was a little Japanese man. And the guy says, "Hey," again. And both of them just turned and looked down at this guy who's just sitting there immaculate in his kimono. And then he says to the drunk, he says, "Hey, what you been drinking?" And, just in this really easy vernacular, and ended up having a conversation with the drunk. And it totally dispelled the entire communication, the entire conflict. And it was through kind words and questions. And so the fellow that wrote the story said that, then he came to his train stop. And what he realized, what he thought needed combat, was really resolved with kind words. And that for me had such a huge impression. Of course, when I first read that story, there was no Aikido here. And I was always intrigued by it. But several years later, I end up going to a dental conference, and a man whom you may know about, his name is Tom Crum, was presenting his work that he called The Magic of Conflict. And Tom was an Aikidoist. And that was that moment that it really, my life transformed, and I decided to leave my engineering work behind and start this consulting business, where I would teach people these concepts. And of course, I had a lot to learn because I hadn't integrated the material yet. But I came back here and there was Aikido, and I've been practicing for 33 years now. And it really helps inform the work I do with conflict. And that's where that spiral impact comes from. So and I studied with Tom for several years, and then I've evolved. He's retired now, and I've evolved the work into something that's different than what he did, but the same at the same time. So I've made it my own work, and I've added different components to it than what he was teaching way back then. But it boils down to, Mary, the difference between force and power. That's what it all boils down to, and it's really about self-development.
So it was so strong because many times when we're caught in a conflict, we are at this heightened state and we are offended in some way and we need to defend ourselves, just as the story said, right? We need to defend ourselves and a sense of justice, putting things right in the world. And how do I do that? By standing my ground.
Right.
Right. In this confrontational, you can't say that to me. These are my boundaries. These are my rights,
Yeah.
rights-based language. And you're offering a different path.
Right. And it's interesting, because I really love teaching. I mean, I do a lot of virtual things, but when you can demonstrate the simplicity of what happens with Aikido. And actually, Mary, we can demonstrate that right here. If you take both of your fists and push them together, and you feel this resistance. And as I teach, which may be different than others, is this is conflict. Conflict, by definition, is to strike together. And that's what we have here. And this is force against force. And the strongest person will win this if you go at it this way. And it could be physical strength, psychological strength, or emotional strength. It doesn't matter. But spiral, and what I learn in Aikido, is you just open one of those, you open those hands and you just move with it. And so that's a little difficult when you're solo, but you get that feeling of letting that resistance melt away. And so in practicality, what I do in Aikido is I move in and with so that I end up next to the person, and it dissipates all the resistance. And to have conflict, you have to have something to push against. And sometimes that's ourselves, but a lot of times when what we're talking about is another person. And that is where the resistance comes in. And when you can study that and recognize, when am I pushing, then you can say, okay, let me pause here and do something different. Do something different, because the pushing is not going to get me where I want.
Absolutely. When we are caught in these conflicts and we think, okay, this is what's happening and you are wrong and you need to change and you're being unprofessional or whatever it is, I think a lot of what we are pushing against is our own narrative and our own view of the world. And whether or not the facts are on our side, what usually helps is to get out of that push and pull, that win lose proposition, instead of thinking about what is it that I want and what am I going to do. And so then you're not pushing against that other person to change or to move. It's you're moving yourself. And so then that changes the relationship that you're having with the other, what you're expecting of the other, and what you're expecting of yourself.
And I often will say to people that'll say, I'm not going to even bother talking to that person because they will never change. And how many times do you hear that,
A
particularly
lot.
in our culture today? And my question always back is, so listen to yourself, and are you willing to change? Because if we go in with the intention of changing the other person's mind, we will never do it.
Right.
It's that, getting into a debate around facts never works, because it just creates more resistance. And if we go into it, and I do this, I mean, I have had some amazing conversations and transformations for both myself and other people, having conversations about some of the really difficult subjects of today. That, of course, I don't do that in work environments, but in terms of having a conversation where you can really open people's eyes up and my own eyes to see things a little differently, and understand where we're coming from. And oftentimes there is not a right or wrong. There's somewhere in the middle that we really is where the truth, where the relative truth lives, I would say. So, yeah.
There's certainly an art to having a robust set of beliefs that guide us, that we really believe to be true, and allowing other people to not see what we see.
Yeah. Right. And the more we scream it, I worked with a coach a long time ago, or I was considering working with a coach a long time ago, and he told me, he said, wouldn't you, if you had the cure for cancer, wouldn't you want to get on the rooftops and scream it? And I said, no, I wouldn't. Because if I did that, nobody would believe it. They wouldn't hear me. I know that much, is if you've got that thing and you're so convinced everyone needs it, nobody will listen to you.
That's right. I mean, communication is more relationship than the words that somebody says, right? How do you make somebody feel? How does somebody feel around you? How do you feel around somebody else? And so we know it's the same words said by different people. It just strikes us as can be polar opposites given the nature of the relationship and the care that's either present or not present.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, getting to someone's essence. And really, I talk a lot about intention in my work, and one of those intentions is to have a really deep personal intent. And mine is to honor myself and others at all times. I mean, that's my intent. And when I come from that intent, it's really makes people really interesting and makes me really curious. And I love that about people, to really be able to connect and really understand somebody and know that we all come informed through our background, and that's where we come from. And I think it's fascinating. If we can be fascinated rather than outraged, that's when we put ourselves in a position of power and influence.
Yes, I love that. Curiosity cures so much. And so would you speak a little bit to the idea of kindness? People talk about toxic positivity and they are on the lookout for people policing other people's tone as a way to silence dissent. I think kindness is always appropriate. I think holding people accountable for their actions is kind. So, do you run into anybody accusing you of wanting to shellack the world and, oh, let's just, put a smile on when I know that's not what you're talking about, but how would you talk about that?
That's such a great question, Mary. I always go back to the thing, and actually it's in my book, that the goal is not to be nice, but it's to be sincere. And to me, sometimes, and I'm not using the word kind, but I could, I mean, kind to me is more around sincerity than nice. Nice seems to be couched in some lies or untruths in some ways. But kind to me is always, it's always great to be kind. And I think it's always great to be sincere around who you are. And, I don't get a lot of shellacking around. I don't get accused of shellacking things and positivity a lot. And I think part of that is I'm also willing to ask deep questions around things. And I am always willing to shift things to see where the opportunity is as well, and what the learning is. But I don't get called on that a lot. But I think it comes more from really wanting to honor that person with questions and acknowledgments, rather than just saying, oh, she's just wonderful. It's all good. It's all good. I had a old colleague of mine that always said, it's all good. And actually, the fact is it's not all good
Right.
necessarily. And
Right.
he demonstrated that to me in a really graphic way once, and I was like, I thought everything was good.
That's right. Yeah, that is certainly a hand waving, a way of talking about, in a way I don't want to talk about it. I just everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
I
Everything's
live
fine.
in the South and, in this country there are different regional differences and, this idea of being nice. I like the distinction of nice and kind and sincere. And I talk to so many people, and I'm sure you do too, that self-describe as being conflict averse, and they don't want to deal with conflict. They're afraid of conflict. And a lot of people at least talk to me in the South about they want to be nice. And there's this societal expectation, especially for women, to be nice. And what I want to help people understand is that to be nice or to be kind is to say the truth. Nobody's going to read your mind and nobody's coming to save you. You have to take ownership and responsibility for the work situation that you want, the culture that you want, and if it's not happening, what are you going to do about it? And that means that person who is doing something that you deem to be inappropriate, it's not nice or kind to sit and take it, right? That shuts down actual authentic relationships.
Mary, what I find with people is they get caught in not knowing what to say. And so they kind of go back to just being nice. And because they don't know what to say. And I'd say most people don't like to be confrontational. And I don't teach confrontation as a way, because I do find confrontation does create more resistance. But find what I do with people is coaching them again to enter in and spiral. And so, and what does that look like? And that looks like, you know, I want to see that the world from that person's standpoint. So it's going to involve asking questions of myself and of the other person to find out what's really going on. Because I find sometimes we can react to something and we're reacting out of our own history rather than what really is current and present with what's happening. So I always encourage people to become, you know, again, it gets back to that curiosity. Do you really know what that person meant? Where, what's behind their response? And, you know, I think there's a lot of people that couch that their world in humor that makes it really hard to come back to. And, but there's always that opportunity to come back and say, so what did you actually mean by that? You know, tell me more about what, how you see this situation. And so we become, again, instead of going in and saying, I don't like what you said about that, that is a different thing. Whereas I might not like what they said about it, but if I say, tell me more about what you're thinking, now we become in a conversation rather than I'm being defensive over what you said. Because I find when you can, and I don't want to say it's calling somebody out, but it's really kind of moving in and really learning more about where that person's coming. And so I find that that is one thing that people don't know what to do is, and oftentimes an open-ended question is such a great way. Of course, as you know, Mary, why is a bad question? Why are you saying that? But, you know, how did you come to that? Or what's your experience with this? Or tell me more about that. Those are such important questions that can diffuse those things and address a conflict without being confrontational. I also think that, you know, one of the things I think that is most missed in conflict is intention. And most people aren't thinking about what intention is around when they communicate. And as I said earlier, you know, my intention is to honor myself and others. And so earlier in my life, I didn't think about honoring myself. I only thought about honoring others, which is that being nice kind
Right.
of thing, right? So I think it's important to really be clear on what your intention in this relationship. It's like when we talked earlier about how often people will say, I'm not gonna even bother because they will never change. Thinking back on what is your intention to change them? Or to learn about what how they see the world, how to make this product better, how to improve our workflow. If you can really think what the intention is, that's not necessarily specific about the other person, it really moves you forward. So, did I answer your question? Now I'm thinking,
Yes.
what was the question you
No,
asked?
it's wonderful because as you're talking, you know, when I think I do restoration work, right? So, of course, I do conflict management, but I'm interested in restoration because we're talking about relationships. It's not just this one-off issue. We've got this relationship as colleagues because, you know, I do workplace conflict resolution. And as we think about what is somebody else's intention, but that self-reflective piece, what is my intention? It helps us not to focus on this one issue as if the issue is the problem. There's a breakdown in the relationship, whether it's in communication, whether it's maybe I'm villainizing the other person for whatever reason. And so curiosity always helps us to humanize the other. Curiosity about ourselves helps us to see what part we're playing in this breakdown. And I think curiosity and intention helps us to think, play the long game, right? When we think about managing the specific issue, it's short term, as if we get done with whatever this conflict is, and one, we're done with conflict, and we have winners and losers. But when we look at needs and we look to see how can everybody win, because we're all still together. Right? We're still working towards, and we need to be able to have a working relationship. And so it is easier to make somebody a cardboard cutout. It's easier to say, this is who you are in the short term. It is not easier in the long term because having good, reliable relationships work appropriate relationships actually leads to ease, comfort, creativity, high engagement, so on and so forth.
And longevity. And Mary, I often will bring with me a hammer and a nail and a screw and a screwdriver. And talk about, if my job is to nail boards together, as an analogy, I can take, a hammer and a nail, and I can pound that hammer and that nail. And that's like the short-term thing. It requires a lot of force. I got to be really on target. And if I miss even a little bit, my nail's going to get bent or my fingers are going to get bruised. But that's how a lot of us do things, is we hammer away. And that's that I keep telling them what to do and they're not doing it. And it's like, it's that hammer. But the screw and the screwdriver, there's a little bit of force. You got to get it to start, but it's rotational. It's rotational. And that's the Aikido piece, is rotational. And that's the spiral piece that I use. It's rotational. And so it's easier to drive, and you get a better, more stable, long-term result because there's more connection in that. And I think that's an analogy a lot of people can understand. And it's the same is true in the terms of the way we interact, whether it's a person, an event, or even a thing. So, we can have a struggle with our car,
That's right. As I say, a bull in a china shop, right?
Right, exactly.
That it made me think about what it means to be in conversation. And conversation is a dialogue. The distinction between talking at a person as if they are an object or a brick wall versus what happens when you have the dialectic. And the dialectic is a back and forth. It is very spirally, right?
Yeah,
It's
it is.
as we flow together, the end product is not yours or mine, it's ours.
Right,
And
right.
whoever is in the conversation, because it grows and it becomes organic and it flows. And this is what we want, especially at work. We want the benefit of everybody's experience, background, their strengths to
Yeah.
make whatever it is that we're working on better.
Yeah. Yes. And Mary, in your work in restoration, do you find very many generational differences in the way people handle conflict at work?
Most people that I talk to today, one of the things I want to talk about is generational issues. And while I do see that and I recognize that, I think it's more a surface problem. And but it has to be addressed. But it's really about how do we communicate with people. It's almost, I think it's in a way artificially drummed up in our culture for culture wars. But I mean, there is something to it, but that's more surfacey. Underneath is just really basic human dynamics.
I agree with you. I it was just kind of curious as to your experience because people do want to hang on to that. And I saw a presentation a few years ago where the fellow he showed like covers to magazines about those young people. And it was funny because they were all 50 years old and it was the same issues. And it was just the fact that, it's just a matter of experience. And I don't find the generalizations around generations to be true in terms of communication either. So, yeah. But I mean, but
I think it's a gateway in for any way that people want to start addressing healthy work cultures. I'll take anything, and then we can look at it. And what it really needs to happen is we need to have, what are our employee-centric values? How are we going to treat one another? How are we going to communicate? Instead of my way is the best way. No matter where you are on the generation, we are together. So that means we need to have conversation. We need to have a plan that works for us at this time. We need to be resilient. So on and so forth. So it's like, in a way, it's an entry to go ahead and talk about how we can have a better work together.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was on your website and I started to watch your video about talking about conflict like water.
Oh, yes.
Could you tell us about
I'm
that?
so glad you asked me that. Mary, as you know, our work is hard to put return on investment. And while I know that the work that you and I do saves lives, it can save billions, millions. It can prevent a company from going under. I mean, And it can also make people just happier. But I was just thinking a few years ago about how do you relate conflict to something else that's tangible? And I thought it's like water. And just for our listeners here, in my work, of course, with the martial arts, it's that flowing. It's that flow that we want to get to. And actually, that's a symbol that we use in Aikido is a wave. And also, water flowing down a stream. It's that's conflict. The water is moving into the rocks and the earth, and it's free flowing, and it creates this beauty. And it creates. So, but what happens in our lives is we take water and we contain it. And I use the analogy, and I'm not going to be able to give you all the numbers off the top of my head, but in the analogy, I start off with a distant drip that we hear. And I don't know if you've ever experienced that. I know I have, where you hear a drip, but it's distant and it's not constant. But you know it's there. And that is something that I think a lot of managers and leaders, directors need to be really aware of, are those little drips that are not constant. Like the boss I talked about earlier, it wasn't a real drip. I actually said to him, I'm having difficulty here. Now, in his life, it might have seemed like a drip, but he didn't address it. So what ended up happening got really big. So, but those are drips in the wall, are those things we have gut feelings about. It's when we have an employee that doesn't that might say something, but we don't take it as serious as they mean. And I think that happens a lot because people don't want to be disruptive. They don't want conflict, but they can say something, and we really, as leaders, need to really hear that. So that's the distant drip. And but then there's also the drip that's right in front of us. And that's that thing that keeps going on. It's that sarcasm, it's the micromanagement, it's whatever that is that drips, 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 drips. And then all of a sudden that drip, that really disengages people. For example, again, it gets back to my work situation where I put up with that, I put up with that, I put up with that. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't do it anymore. The studies show that people hugely disengage when they have those little petty conflicts all day long. And a lot of times, people don't even know that's happening. We accept people's behavior, even if it's dysfunctional, as part of who they are. And it's interesting where we can get in again and ask questions, get clarified on our intent. And that will really help dissipate those things. But that's not what typically happens. And I think in that video, I show a picture of a chandelier falling out of the wall eventually with that constant dripping. And then, of course, we have puddles. And when you look at how much time managers, the typical manager spends 25 to 40% of their time dealing with workplace conflict. That's a lot of time. And even if you just take their salary, it's a lot of money. And if you take all the other places where it sucks energy out of what you're there to do, the cost on that are huge. And then, of
Huge.
course, then of course we can burst pipes and stuff like that that cost our reputation. It's litigation. It's all of that stuff. So thinking about how do we let water flow more easily? How do we let conflict flow more in our lives where we're addressing it in a healthy way, a natural way? And that's what I call conflict mastery, which is you recognize that you got to have conflict. You got to have people speaking up. You got to have those differences in order to really create and flourish. And when we don't know how to deal with those things effectively, as you know, it does. I was talking with some entrepreneurial companies, and one of the things I've noticed is so often when small companies come together, it attracts the people. Oftentimes, they're either really different or alike. Like somebody that's really a people person will attract someone that's a real detail person. And they come together out of their differences because they need each other. But then as time goes on, those differences drive them crazy. And I've had conversations, I've seen companies dissolve over those issues because they didn't really have the skills to be able to deal with that. And I always say, when you're a growing company, take the time to learn those skills. And what I often call is a credo. which is what's our agreement in terms of questions we ask each other, how we're going to work together. And that's part of the transformational work I do with teams that are really having trouble, is what are, you know, what's your credo, what it's important to you, and how are you going to check in with that? So often, you know, again, things just start growing and mushrooming, and then, you know, it gets out of control. I often say culture is kind of like honeysuckle. Now, you're in Tennessee, I'm in Indiana, but my parents live in Georgia. You know, in Georgia, they have kudzu that just grows over everything.
Right.
Here we have honeysuckle. But both of those items, to me, a woods is kind of like a healthy team. But then you have honeysuckle or kudzu that comes in, and that's the strongest personality. And that's what takes over, unless you get your shears out and you really define what that culture is going to be. But I use that analogy a lot. It's like if you just leave it up to what is, you will get a lot of, you won't be happy long run. You'll lose people.
Absolutely. You know,
Yeah.
we're going to have strong personalities and we're going to have all different kinds of people at work. And so prepare for it because
Right.
work is for everybody. So
Right.
it's also for the strong personality. They deserve to have a healthy work environment.
Yeah.
And also for the person who is maybe more timid or introverted or however we want to talk about them, a healthy work environment is for everyone. And so you're absolutely right. If you leave it to chance, you ought not be surprised
Right.
when the people that you are important to you leave, or you're not meeting your goals, or it's, you know, people have those blues about going into work, and you're spending all of this unnecessary time
Yeah.
on conflict that if it was addressed at the very beginning, when you hear the distant drip, if
Yes.
we attune ourselves to having conversations, this is not about, you know, policing everybody, or sometimes people think it's getting into the petty. It isn't, but it is asking people to, and it empowering people that if you feel like something is wrong, early, often, swiftly, justly, let's get to it. Let's have that discussion. And as you said, I really think that so much of the dysfunction in a work environment is what other people call petty, but it's
Yeah.
not petty to me. And if
No.
you write somebody else off, you're writing off them and what's important to them. And if you spent a little bit of time up front dealing with it and
Yeah.
talking about it and making a plan, it doesn't mean everybody gets their way, but we
Right.
find out what is the need, underlying need. And that is the humanizing effect of a good leader,
Yeah.
empowering people to solve their own issues, empowering, you know, listening. And when you set those conditions, it's amazing how you have set the individuals in the organization up for success.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's really exciting, and it doesn't do service to let those things go by. And you know, we're speaking to the choir here. And you know what I find too is when I work with a team that's having a lot of difficulty and we really start, you know, having some real conversations and real definition of what it is that they want to create as a team. And that and that's as the culture team part, sometimes people opt out, you know, and it's funny because I always tell leaders, you know, you may have somebody leave because if you're going to have a culture that's going to communicate and be respectful of each other, not everybody wants that. And if somebody chooses to leave, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And yeah, I've seen that happen many times because they no longer have their freewheeling way of controlling everything. And so that does happen. Yeah.
And I absolutely agree. You know, I think there's a place for everybody.
Yeah.
And but we get to decide what this place is like and what we value and what the workplace standards, civility standards are, and what we will and won't tolerate.
Yeah.
And we see that a lot with the highest performer. What kind of behavior are you going to tolerate to the staff? Or how are you going to, what do you really value as an organization? And who do you value?
Right. And I tell you, I've done a lot of work in hospitals. And it's interesting because there's always a saying, He's a great doctor, but, or she's a great nurse, but. And sometimes those people, they do get away with a lot of things because they're seen as irreplaceable. But the price that is paid for that kind of behavior is huge. It's huge.
It's
So,
always short-term, short-sighted when you give people, quote unquote, a pass. It is to the detriment and the morale of everyone else around. And I think we have, I do believe we have a moral obligation to treat everyone well.
I
And
agree.
that's everyone. And their mental health, their physical space, all of these things matter and we ought to pay attention to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. People are, I love people and I love to see people be able to contribute at their best. And it's exciting, Mary, we do great work. I mean, it's exciting to see the transformation that can happen. And one of the reasons, I've always had people say, you should go work with kids or you should do that. And it's like, I go into workplaces for a reason, which is a lot of people in workplaces don't get the opportunity for the education. And I feel like you can touch more people that may not ever be touched anywhere else when you work in when you go into workplaces.
Yeah,
So,
I absolutely agree. So, Karen, you mentioned you have something coming up.
a couple things. I do master classes that are free that, I add in video and we're all audio here. And a lot of the Aikido piece, it's like you almost got to see it to really grasp it. And so I do master classes that if you go to karensmasterclass.com, you can find out when the next one is and sign up. And then the other thing is I also, I'm in process and I may not be done by the time this is published, but go to my website, which again is karenvalencik.com or spiralimpact.com. And I am launching an online learning, and that'll be different belt levels. There'll be a level where you can just participate in this video content that I've created that really takes you through the spiral impact process. And then there'll be a blue belt, which is where you will have specific things that you need to apply this to and turn it in. And it's still all virtual. And then the purple belt goes on to in-person training. So, because I think that's really an important part. And then black belt, I am looking to certify people in my content, and that is going to be done on an individual basis, but that's my intent. So,
That is so exciting. What a wonderful resource.
It is. It's been a long time in the works. So, yeah, it's been a long time in the
You know, if
works.
I think about your younger self who didn't know, about maybe coaching opportunities when you were having the problem as a young engineer, and if this was available to you, and I think that, getting the word out, it is the case that people are more aware of coaching and but I still think it's sort of t tangential that I don't think the everyday person thinks it's for them, that this kind of training or this kind of development is accessible or available to them. And there are so many wonderful resources, like the one that you just mentioned that you've been working on, books. And I encourage everyone who's listening to think about how you can learn and grow and develop in these areas.
Mary, I don't know if you've experienced this, but I experience that with people think they have conflict, they think they've done something wrong. And years ago, I did for a medical device company here in town, I did quarterly trainings. And at that time, I called it using conflict creatively. And people would come feeling like they were being punished. But they would be leave, they would be delighted. And I told the people that were putting this together, I said, maybe we need to call this something else. And they said, oh no, we need to have a conflict course. But it was funny because I always had that resistance that I had to deal with when people came in. And then a lot of times people will introduce me and say, Karen, is this an expert in conflict? And people say, well, I don't have any conflict. And it's like, well, if you don't have conflict, you're probably not really living. And I think conflict, again, it's inevitable, it's natural, and it's what makes us grow. So, and it doesn't have to be with another person, it can be inside ourselves.
That's right. I mean, how do we have the Grand Canyon without water and the
Right.
babbling brook? And and all of the beauty that water presents, and how life-giving it is. A conflict is, if we allow it, it can be very life-giving. It can be very, conflict can be very beneficial. Managed conflict helps everyone. And this is how we grow and develop. It's when we don't manage it. As you said, we try to contain it, but it won't be contained, right?
No,
We
it won't
want to
last long.
suppress it and magical thinking, but it's coming out, and then it's harder to, not impossible, but it becomes harder to de-escalate because we're now compounding the issues. And so the conflict isn't the problem. Being caught in conflict is normal. It's just a part of the human condition. It's what are we going to do with it?
And it all starts with ourselves. There's a saying in Aikido, Igatsu, which is self-development. We have to start with ourselves. And my work, we have a lot, I do a lot of work around centering and becoming present. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to develop. And I actually feel like when you can master conflict, that's a pathway to freedom. It's a pathway to freedom because now when you have that skill, it serves you everywhere. Not a person that can really deflate your balloon because you understand what you need to do with that. And I don't mean to say life is a bed of roses.
I think you're so right, though. The more that I do it and put into practice what I teach others, the more courage and confidence I have. And the more courage you have, the more courage you get, that virtuous cycle. And the same thing with confidence.
And I would, tell your listeners, I think the reason we said earlier, I think the reason so many people avoid conflict is they don't know what to do with it. And I think that, Mary, you and I can provide people with those tools. It's not about you. It's not about confrontation. If you think it's got to be confrontation, you're not thinking right, because I don't like confronting people. And I don't, and it's, I don't think it's so effective. Ask them questions, get curious, get clear on intent. Those things are what dissipate the resistance so that then you can actually have a real conversation.
Absolutely. So,
So,
Karen, when you think about the future of work, what do you think needs to happen so that all people are not only treated with dignity and respect, but encouraged to thrive and flourish?
well, I think that gets back to leadership. And I find that I think what I find is that there are people, there aren't, let me start that over. I think all people want to do the right thing and do good work. And I think it's up to our leadership to provide that space and that culture. And we can give people at every level in the organization the tools that we're talking about, Mary. But if we don't have the support of leadership, it doesn't matter, because they are the ones that really call the shots. And I think it's, so I think it's a leadership and culture challenge. And I think if your culture is strong enough, the new leaders come in and they carry that forward if they have that intent. So I think it gets to be around shifting how we do it. And if everybody knew how much easier it is to bring out positive engagement rather than trying to micromanage and call all the shots, it's really, to me, it's all about developing people to really come forth with their best. I find it's fascinating to, rather than telling somebody I need this, to say, hey, what I'd like to accomplish is this thing that's a little bit further out. How do you see us doing that? How do you see us doing that? So now I'm engaging their brain, and I find that they will come up with all kinds of ideas that I will never think about. And for me, that's about innovation. So I think if companies want to stay ahead of the curve in innovation and being able to attract the best employees, you've really got to learn how to engage with people. And that's what I call conflict mastery. It's not creating necessarily conflict, but it's becoming aware of we need to have that connection where we can create momentum and movement and creating that awareness. So that's, it's about one-on-one relationships, really. It's about fostering those.
Karen, thank you so much for your time. It's just been so wonderful chatting with you, and the hour has just flown by.
It's nice to meet you, Mary. Let's stay connected.
Absolutely. Karen, thank you so much for being on Conflict Managed. An absolute pleasure to talk with you. I'm excited for your online content to come out. It sounds really interesting and helpful for those of us who want to learn more about how to deal with conflict in a way that is fruitful. Conflict Managed is produced by third-party workplace conflict restoration services and hosted by me, Mary Brown. You can find us online at 3pconflictrestoration.com. Come back. We have new episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't had a chance to check out my new book, How to Be Unprofessional at Work: Tips to Ensure Failure, it's 80 tips of what not to do at work and starts a conversation about what to do instead. Our music is courtesy of Dove Pilot. And remember, conflict is normal and to be expected. Let's deal with it. Until next time, take care.